What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon. Oh, I feel like I should open with like a... We're doing monkeys today. We're going to jump into the world of the super apes, who I've always been extremely fond of. And researching them made me more fond of them, question mark, but maybe also less fond of them. Meanwhile, I fucking hate the Red Ghost, I've learned. What a weird character. We're going to talk all about these guys. July on Grey Malkin Lane on both the main show and the Patreon is all dedicated to what we are calling Colossus Month. So over here on the Patreon channel, we are hitting different Russian or Soviet characters that kind of tell the Colossus story from a very different angle. And the super apes are not who you think of first, but this is going to be a fun and delicious episode with two of my very favorite people to hang out with. Former Marvel editor, Molly Laser, and the voice of Hercules, Sean Porrett. It's nice to see you both. Let me have you both introduce yourselves with your pronouns and just kind of as an early intro question, what is your personal relationship with monkeys? Do you have any good monkey stories? Let's begin with Molly. Molly, welcome back to Grey Malkin Lane.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Molly Laser. My pronouns are she, her. Former Marvel editor, 2004 to 2008. Current high school reading teacher. Monkey stories.
That's kind of a weird thing to think about, right?
Yeah. I have stories about other zoo animals, but not monkeys.
Do you have a favorite monkey?
Well, favorite current monkey on the Righteous Gemstones, which I haven't finished the most recent season, but BJ's helper monkey, Dr. Watson, is pretty awesome.
Excellent.
That he is.
And let me also welcome Sean. Hi, Sean.
That means hello. My name is Sean. He, they. I'm from Solving for X and X-Men Test Podcast. I've always loved monkeys. I think it stems from my childhood. One of my two favorites are the Care Bear Cousins, Playful Heart Monkey and Swift Heart Rabbit.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. We are of a similar age. I remember those like Saturday morning feelings. Those are a lot of fun. I'm going to toss some monkeys at you both and we're just going to see if you don't know them, you can pass. That's OK. Molly, are you more a Gorilla Grodd or more Mojo Jojo?
I'm going to go with Gorilla Grodd on that one only because I actually know who he is as opposed to I've heard of Mojo Jojo.
Mojo Jojo's from the Powerpuff Girls. He's a little chimpanzee with like a brain casing. He's like, he talks like that.
Powerpuff Girls are actually past my era somehow.
That's fair. They're a little past mine too. Yeah. Sean, and we're going to go of an age. You may not know these. Megilla Gorilla or Grape Ape?
Ooh, I don't really know Megilla. I'm going to go with Grape Ape.
Do you remember Grape Ape?
I do remember Grape Ape.
with his friend Beagly Beagly. Everybody look up Grape Ape, the 40-foot tall purple gorilla. Molly, we're going to go Hit Monkey or Curious George?
Curious George. And just to note, because I thought of this after I said Dr. Watson, the 2006 Curious George movie with music by Jack Johnson.
Yep.
That is a quality film. I would just like to say quality.
Sean, although we could do this for hours because there's so many monkey characters out there. King Louie from The Jungle Book or Donkey Kong?
Now you're going to have I Want to Be Like You in my head all day. But
I immediately started that as soon as he said
it. It always gets stuck in there rent free. I'm gonna go King Louis just because I'm interested in everything like he is.
OG King Louis or Christopher Walken as King Louis?
I'm kind of offended you even asked, but OG.
I just wanted to remind you that Christopher Walken once did a full musical number as King Louis in the Jungle Book remake. We're here to talk about the Super Apes today. Now, weirdly, I did a monkey episode of my show with my friend Theo Chase a while back. We covered the 70s mutant character, the Gibbon, who is indelibly associated with Marvel's Monkeyverse, which we'll talk about briefly today. There's a universe out there with all monkey superheroes. I like monkeys a lot. I was a kid that like used to read like animal encyclopedias when I was little. I would love to like go bird watching and like hang out at the zoo. I didn't want to like rush through the zoo. I wanted to bring like a sketch pad and like watch animal behavior, you know, that kind of stuff. Anytime the monkeys are like super active, when they're swinging around, I really love it. I love a baby monkey. Like you get a cage with like a baby gorilla in it and they're just, it's so ridiculous. And monkeys are in everything, right? They're connected to human evolution. We associate them with human characteristics. Monkeys also used to be sent into outer space quite often. If you go back into the United States slash Russia Cold War, beginning kind of in the 1940s through World War II, there's a lot of complex history, but the US and Russia were both trying to get animals in space so that they could get men in space. There were some monkeys sent into space in the 40s and 50s. A lot of them died. Russia also sent up a lot of dogs. I think there were even some cats. The first creature who ever lived and survived going into orbit was a dog named Laika in Russia in 1957. And the first human in space was not until 1961, which was still several years before the landing on the moon. Russia put the first human in space. It's a guy named Yuri Gagarin in 1961. And then in the US put a monkey in space that same year named Ham the chimpanzee, who also survived. He's the first primate that survived space. When we open Fantastic Four number one, it's very indelibly associated with the space race. And Reed is trying to get everybody to the moon, and they got to break into the facility, and they get bombarded by cosmic rays. And it's just a year or so later, in April 1963, where Stanley and Jack Kirby give us the Russian version of this story. Ivan Kragov, who is a, or I suppose in Russian it'd be Ivan Kragov, who is a scientist with iconic hair, let me just say that first off, who wants to emulate what they did with the Fantastic Four. And so he has a bunch of monkeys that he's been experimenting on. He loads them in. They are trained monkeys and they go into space and get bombarded by cosmic rays and get superpowers. And they come back to fight the Fantastic Four multiple times. Although the story gets amped up really quickly because this is where the Watcher shows up too and things get kind of insane. Molly, I know you've been reading through the early FF with your kids over the last few years. What was their reaction to reading the Super Apes story 60 years after publication?
So we did that really, really early on. Just for reference, my children at this point have probably read about 250 issues of Fantastic Four. We're actually in the Dwayne McDuffie era right now, after skipping a whole chunk in the middle. We read the Super Apes really early on when they were like four, and they got a kick out of it. I think they were really more interested in the Watcher in general. They thought he was funny. The apes were funny. He doesn't come back as much as some of the other villains from that era, like the Mad Thinker or the Puppet Master. But yeah, no, they enjoyed it when he was there.
I've done the Trial of the Puppet Master on my show, and I'm a big Mad Thinker head. I just haven't been able to fit him into my rotation yet. I like that guy a lot. Sean, were these characters that you were familiar with before I invited you to do this episode? Were you aware of the superpowered Russian apes?
I believe he just showed up in one of the Spider-Man comics, and that was like my first introduction to him ever.
The
So
Red
when you first,
Ghost?
yeah, the Red Ghost, and it was a very similar story where like he lost control of the apes and they had to figure out who had control of them. So that was like my first introduction just recently. So like you came on right around the time I first heard of him. So I'm excited for a lesson today.
I think you might be referencing an Avengers title by Steve Orlando, which is where the ghosts of like the was it the ghosts like the cosmic ghosts of the apes that the Red Ghost used to experiment on for
Yes, you're
revenge?
right. That is Avengers.
That's that
It
was
all
an
jumbled in my
Avengers
head.
tie-in. We'll get there in a minute. So the Red Ghost, Sean, do you want to describe this man for us?
He's a
Well,
lot.
if you go off of Red Ghost in the 80s, where I first read some of the comics you assigned, he's a very sexy old man. He's got like this open shirt with his big, strong chest showing. He's got long, great. He's kind of like, I mentioned him last time I was on your show, actually. He's like Riff Raff from
Yes.
a
Oh my
Rocky Horror
God.
Picture
Yes.
Show.
It's
He's
like
got
bald
that
on
hair.
top with like long hair. My kids call that haircut a Picard, like from like Picard. Like it's bald on top and like the ring around the side, but his is like grown out hippie
Yeah.
style. He has a whole era in the 70s where it's like open shirt all the way to the navel and like a necklace on. He's wearing skin tight. It's giving very much like Putin riding the bear shirtless like energy.
Nice reference.
He's an interesting character. He's a brilliant scientist who's obsessed with mutating monkeys and then like bossing them around. And you know, like many characters, with much power comes much responsibility, or how power corrupts, I suppose, is the better. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So he gets to go in like full world conquering vibes a lot. The Red Ghost itself, that name, red implying kind of communism or Russia in the way that like the Red Star or Red Square would be. And the ghost, something invisible, something that you don't see coming. And when they go through their cosmic rays, he gets the power of intangibility specifically, which gets used to various effects over the years. But again, he's not one of the most often used FF villains. Do you think he makes a credible threat, Molly?
So I was reading your notes for this issue, and I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead here, but where you noted that each of the apes and then also the Red Ghost have powers that match up with some of the FF's powers, I literally never thought of that before. And I thought that was fascinating. And that in itself makes them a more credible threat, even though, like, in the issues that I was assigned to read and also in the summaries of the issues that you sent me that you read, he's really not that big of a threat.
So we're going to talk about that power comparison. Fantastic Four 13, April 1963, is where we first meet them, the Red Ghost and his indescribable super apes. We open on Reed Richards experimenting on the energy he's harnessed from a meteorite, and it explodes. And he once heard about a meteor that fell in Siberia, quote, flattening 100 square miles of forest. And he's long suspected that the Russians have learned how to harness this energy to contribute to their own rocket propulsion. Meanwhile, behind the Iron Curtain, we meet Ivan Pregov, who is dressed in green fur and has the worst haircut. It's the long shaggy mane and the bald top. He works with monkeys and he loves to rant about his own power as he trains his pre-selected primates to complete specific tasks. Now, later retcons will show that he has killed a lot of monkeys along the way, but right now we just see him being kind of cruel and treating his selected monkeys as kind of slaves. He'll give them bananas if they do something nice, but he calls them literally my monstrous slaves while he's calling himself a genius. So he is planning a space flight and he has trained a gorilla to man the flight, and he has trained a baboon by starving it how to fire a machine gun, and he has trained an orangutan as the ship's repairman. And so we have a gorilla, a baboon, and an orangutan as his little buddies. The orangutan is sitting there in its first panel. There's flies buzzing all around it, and Kregoff's like, "You brainless creature!" Like, he does not treat his slaves very well. Molly, you had some sort of realization.
Yes, I did. Okay, so if the gorilla is the pilot, when you think about Ben Grimm's body when he becomes the thing, it's a little gorilla-esque. Johnny is the one who likes tinkering with the cars, and he's the and the orangutan is the one who ends up with Johnny-like powers. I have nothing on Sue and the machine gun, but this is like kind of predicting whose powers they will get
Yeah,
analyzed.
it's not a direct reflection, but we will talk about it, absolutely. So he says, "At last, my crew of apes is ready, and now we go to the moon to claim it for the communist empire." That is not Russian, but that's the Red Ghost voice you're getting. So they launch into space. They have timed it for cosmic rays to bombard them. This is like a little like gamma radiation in Marvel. Like, we only see the successful attempts at mutations when you gotta think, like, anyone else who's hit by these rays just gets like holes blown open in them, or like they wind up with like their testicles withering up or something. It's an
Oh,
unpleasant
you
thing.
had to go there.
Well, I mean, it's radiation, literally. Like, that's what, when you read about what radiation does to the body, it's not a pleasant thing usually. I, Ivan Kragov, shall be even more powerful than the Fantastic Four, and so shall my apes. Together, we shall be lords of the solar system. So it's kind of like they just opened a box of like Bertie Bott's every flavor beans. And Ivan's like, "What superpowers will we get? Wah-ha-ha-ha!" Luckily, no one's horribly mutated. So the gorilla gets massive super strength. So the thing, right? He's still a gorilla, but he's super super, super strong. His name is Miklo, M-I-K-L-H-O. The baboon gets shapeshifting. So this is the most powerhouse of the characters, by the way. Reading the baboon history alone, he's crazy powerful and super like smart and like ingenuitive. I really like this character. So he's kind of sounds like Reed to me, right? Like he's changing his shape. So this is Igor. And then the orangutan gets magnetic powers, like Magneto. He floats metal around. And this is Piotr. Ivan gets intangibility, so which is kind of a parallel to Sue in its way, because she turns invisible, he turns intangible. My friend David Sexton, who's coming on the show later this fall, wrote the Marvel Mystic Arcana book, like the Marvel Magic handbooks. And it opens with the idea of magic working in fours. And he does a direct comparison with the Fantastic Four and other super teams, comparing them to the elements, where Johnny is fire, Reed is water, Sue is air, and the Thing represents earth. And you can kind of do that with the apes too, right? If the gorilla is strength, which is earth, we get the same kind of flow through them with the water, magnetic being fire, and shapeshifting being air. So it's an interesting thought experiment when you look into this. Okay, so both groups, the Fantastic Four pursue them. They end up in the oxygen-rich environment on the moon. It's a decaying Kree civilization that has like air filters in it. So we see this used often. The Inhumans later live in this blue area of the moon. And it's a classic superhero fight, except they're battling monkeys. And the Watcher shows up and there's a little combat arena. And the baboon turns himself into asbestos in order to fight the Human Torch. And the orangutan like magnets Sue onto his back and is like crawling around with the Invisible Woman, like stuck to his hair on his back. It's ridiculous. And the Red Ghost puts Sue in a cell. He's still starving the monkeys. And Sue compares the apes, quote, to the communist masses, innocently enslaved by their evil leaders, which is a very 1960s view of communism from the American perspective. Sue ends up feeding the monkeys, and they're like, oh, we'll let you out now, which is lovely. And the Red Ghost shows up at the Watcher's house because he wants to steal cosmic weapons. The fact that the Watcher just has this house you can walk, like, if you get to the moon, you can just walk in and steal something, it's fine. But the Watcher, in order to protect himself, sends the Red Ghost through a whole bunch of other dimensions, and he, like, floats super speed through, like, past civilizations and devastated futures, and then like lands back like, oh god, like that was not a pleasant experience. The FF end up trapping the Red Ghost with his like intangibility. The super apes free him and they turn on him like Planet of the Apes style. Wait, what? Why are you glaring at me that way, aiming the ray at me? Your eyes, they're gleaming with hatred, with vengeance. Stay back, do you hear me? I am your master. I made you what you are. Stay back. And they chase him down the hill on the moon. The end. It's a classic superhero introduction, but we have somehow like cosmic time warping involved. It's a crazy story.
Well, it's also an anti-animal testing message now, isn't it?
Good yeah. point.
The comparison of the apes to communist civilians is kind of dehumanizing in a way, right? The idea that the brainless masses are following, which is kind of how liberals will talk about conservatives in America sometimes. I'm going back to, although I voted for her and I love her actually, Hillary Clinton's like basket of deplorables comment. If we're getting called apes and monkeys and like the unthinking masses, that's very unpleasant. But they also say it about us, right? The woke mobs, we're like compared to like monkeys and like poor thinking animals. It's a really arrogant thing to say about anyone, like assuming that someone lacks conscious thought. We don't have to debate that, but it's uncomfortable whenever I read those types of dehumanizing comments.
No, you have a good point. And I try to do the same, try not to get into that hole. But my favorite part of hearing you read this was watching Molly's reactions and her shaking her head at just how ridiculous some of it is. Because yeah, this is like very classic comic book.
It's just funny because in the issue of Fantastic Four that I read to my children literally like an hour ago, the FF just walked into the Watcher's house again on the moon. So it was just funny that you said that, Chad, that like, yeah, you could just walk in and chat with the Watcher and he'll probably get involved even though he's not supposed to.
Who can get it the most, by the way? Are you more for the gorilla, the orangutan, or the baboon? Who's your power player?
You know what? I like the orangutan with his magnetic powers, which are used in pretty interesting ways.
The baboon can get it every time. The way he uses his shape-shifting as you read these appearances is insane. It's really crazy. Sean, that makes you the gorilla. I hope we're going to be the super apes.
Cool. Okay, I'll be Piotr. Why not?
Piotr. It's another Piotr, just like Colossus. Okay, so in FF29, we see them back. There's another hilarious attack. The baboon gets to wear little purple shorts this time. He also gets to drop an asbestos hood with air holes on it on the Human Torch. The use of asbestos in the 60s is truly insane.
Yeah.
There's still asbestos happening in more recent comics. So much asbestos in Marvel. Like,
we could do a whole asbestos episode, just asbestos themed, and there would be plenty to talk about. The gorilla gets to tie Reed Richards to a car that's driving away while holding him in place, so it like stretches Reed out, and he's like, no, ouch! The baboon gets to change into a spinning spiky ball. The Red Ghost drops them on the moon so that the FF will die from oxygen deprivation, but they get to the Watcher's house just in time. There's another little fight, and Yvonne gets an upgrade because he gets to carry a gun that fires electron disintegrator pellets, which, Sean, what do you think an electron disintegrator pellet gun does?
Disintegrates electrons?
which results in?
I don't know.
Atomic matter, like, just splitting apart? I'm not really sure. So the apes get defeated, and Yvonne, like, lands in a machine that again spirals him through time and space. Like, he's just floating out in the cosmos somewhere, which, frankly, couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. In Avengers 12, the Red Ghost is in purple, and he teams up with the Mole Man. In Avengers Annual 3, the Super Apes are back. He now calls them his three beauties, and they attack the... Oh, this is Fantastic Four Annual 3, excuse me, the big Reed and Sue wedding issue. They attack the wedding, and the gorilla gets to pound on Sue's force field while she's in her wedding dress, and Doctor Strange like ends up sending them all to an alien dimension, which feels like pretty harsh actually. But one of the things we're gonna notice here is the different levels of loyalty between Yvonne and the apes. Consistently they work for him and then they turn on him, and it's kind of a funny ongoing pattern. In Iron Man 15-16, which is actually a really fun read, Yvonne is like feeling himself. He gets tight red pants, he's got his open shirt down to the navel, necklace, some hair gel, so his hair's like all spiked out like Wolverine style to the side, and good for you, man. And he has spent months nursing the insane Russian unicorn back to health. I have a unicorn out there episode out there with Daryl Lawrence. If you've heard it, you know this character, but it doesn't work. So Yvonne flees and he blows up his house, and then he builds a huge cosmic ray device because he wants a new army of superpowered primates. And we get to see kind of a creepy aspect of his abilities because he can like float around as like a red mist in the air, which is really creepy. It's like a little blood. It's like a red ghost. Literally. We don't see him used that often. And he says that he can contract the molecules of his mist in order to break things. Okay, so he invades a military base. He powers up some new apes. One of them is super strong and the other gets telepathy. And he calls them Alpha and Beta. So we get our first expansion of the primate program. Iron Man and the Unicorn are there and they are fighting, and there's a big battle with the apes. And the apes turn on Yvonne. They're like, well, you made us super strong and super telepathic, so we can build our own army. Like, fuck you. And then they leave and we've never seen them again. Like, the telepathic ape and super strong ape are just wandering around their Alpha and Beta, just waiting for an X-Men fight someday, which is fun. Watching Yvonne's costume go 1970s is really amusing to me as well. And then we jump to Defenders 7 and 8. We'll pause after this one. Never again will I ally myself with apes. They are too unpredictable, too difficult to control. But porpoises, their intelligence is almost equal to that of a man. So Red Ghost now wants to have a superpowered porpoise army. This is a real story. He works with a guy named Paul Jennings, and he uses cosmic rays to create an army of deadly porpoises, and then he sells them to Atuma to attack Atlantis so they can fight the Submariner. But he also uses a ray to take over the minds of some of the defenders with cosmic rays. He ends up defeated, but this is a crazy story. What do you think about the hard shift to porpoises, Molly?
I think that is batshit. Like, what? I got nothing. That's just insane.
Red Ghost and the Super Porpoises just doesn't have quite the same ring.
No.
Well, also they're limited
it's
to
nice
the
you
water.
Got a new porpoise in life.
Seems like, you know, he shows up, somebody, possibly his own apes, turn on him, and then he gets defeated. He's never like a huge threat, and that kind of carries through going forward as well to an extent. Well, the apes are definitely a bigger threat than he is.
Like, he's not a good leader.
Yeah,
and it's the old thing of like, I don't know, he's using the word slaves. When you enslave something and want them to call you master, it's not gonna end well. Like, that's an uncomfortable parallel here, right? But it's about the treatment of animals. I don't know. We also get that kind of like early vibe that like meteor Reed reference that fell in Siberia. You almost wonder if the apes were initially transformed by that. I don't know. There's some interesting thoughts. The cosmic rays of it all. In Iron Man 82-83, we're just covering the funny parts. The original Super Apes are back with Red Ghost. They fight Iron Man, but it's actually Happy Hogan in the armor, and he gets hit with like a blast of energy and goes spiraling, like the magnetic energy. And then the baboon changes into a bush and like grows some branches to tie Iron Man up, which is a crazy thing to do. Like, I'll be a bush today. And then they throw him off the roof, and like the gorilla bitch slaps Iron Man hard. And here's a caption: like a sack of soft potatoes, the unconscious industrialist is slung across the grim gorilla's shoulder. Then the astonishing simian turns swiftly to his companions, growls what somehow sounds remarkably like orders, and the gibbering baboon furiously nods his hideous head, clenches his eyes tightly, concentrates, and in a blinding blur of motion begins to change. Instants after, a grotesque glider sails through the benighted sky, carrying three most unusual passengers. The gorilla roars out his triumph, pounds his chest proudly, and if one didn't know better, one would almost swear the ape was laughing. You guys, the baboon changes into a full like starship. It's crazy. Like, it's like flying around the country in him. This is so like 1970s cartoon energy. It makes me smile so big. They end up going to a submarine where the Red Ghost has been trapped in his intangible form, and he looks like he is in the disco. Like, he is ready to go dancing.
It makes me think about Skrulls, and I have a thing about Skrulls, but back when Skrulls were used not the way they're used now, but used like in a cooler way, like anything could be a Skrull, and now this ape can be anything. Like I had to read that caption a couple times before I realized that the baboon was the rocket. That's so cool and random and absurd, and I love it.
Shapeshifters need, much like telepaths, you need limitations, you need specificities. You know, Megan's powers work different than Mystique's. The baboon, I think, seems a little bit more like that character ape from the Morlocks, who can like shapeshift into like objects. But this is a crazy power upgrade. To be able to shift into a whole power ship, like, and fly with passengers is nuts. Molly, as one of the editors from Secret Invasion, what's your opinion on the Skrulls?
Oh God, don't get me started
Oh
on
no.
them. Oh no, this could be its own podcast episode. I think Skrulls are awesome, and I think the way that they came to be used at a certain point made me want to slam my head into a table because the cool thing about Skrulls, again, is that anything or anyone could be a Skrull, but when everything and everyone is a super Skrull, that's not fun anymore. So I had very strong feelings about that, when it happened, when there was like a Super Skrull for every team. There's a Fantastic Four Super Skrull and an X-Men Super Skrull and a Defenders Super Skrull. No, stop it. The cool thing about Skrulls is that they could be anyone. I mean, and they did some of that in Secret Invasion, but like that chair could be a Skrull, and I think that's neat. So.
I really like the original Super Skrull. I love a bunch of FF villains, but K'Lert, the Super Skrull, is a great character. I really like him a lot, actually. Okay, we're jumping to Iron Man 83. Again, covering just kind of the loose stuff, but Iron Man has been, or it's Tony Stark, he's been captured, and the Red Ghost wants him to build like a certain kind of cannon for him that, again, doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's called a cosmotronic cannon, and he thinks it's going to be able to like get him out of his stuck intangible form. You guys remember that time Kitty Pryde got stuck as a ghost for a long time and like had to learn how to back out? This is very that for Ivan Kragov. There's a point where the apes have to pass over an electric fence, so the gorilla digs under it, the orangutan magnets himself over it, and then the baboon changes himself into an arrow and fires himself over the fence, which is
Awesome.
amazing.
That's
Holy shit,
awesome.
this security system is terrible. So Tony Stark fixes Yvonne, and then they all end up fighting Iron Man, and he kicks their asses, and the baboon gets to change into a steel ball and an axe, and also a flying buzzsaw. He's amazing. Tony Stark beats them, and in the end, Yvonne is a ghost again. So this is another really fun appearance for these characters that most X-Men fans probably have not read. Sean, any thoughts thus far?
Yeah, I'm seeing why you love these apes. They're a lot of fun. I'm not seeing enough Piotr. I want to see myself in these stories some more.
I love a camp villain. Sauron is my favorite villain. I love a character that just feels like a ranting crazy person. And an army of superpowered apes is just—it's just fucking delightful. It's really fun. We see them in FF 90, 197, where Red Ghost goes back back into space and cosmic rays give him his like corporability back. The baboon gets to be a ladder and like a vest in this issue, which is crazy. We jump to Amazing Spider-Man 223, which is another pretty big appearance for these characters. They materialize in the Empire State University campus, and they're trying to steal, quote, a rare mathematical treatise, which would prove an invaluable aid in my attempt to increase our cosmic ray-induced powers. Because, you know, we didn't die the first time, so let's up the radiation next time. So they end up setting fire to a building. They're really trying to cover their tracks so they don't get caught and end up in a fight with Spider-Man. Spider-Man grabs a fire extinguisher, but surprise, it's a baboon. And he also gets to be a parachute, a sheet of pliable rubber, a net, and a little tornado. He turns into a tornado in this issue, which is crazy to me. This guy's like got a cosmic cube. So they eventually run for it, and Yvonne is like, "You stupid monkeys, you've disappointed me yet again. Did you have to bring flaming ruin down upon our heads? Did you have to act like childish show-offs instead of mature adults? And sir, you are one to talk, dressed the way you are at your age." Ivan calls this guy Hawkbird. They're chasing a pusillanimous wretch, which I love a word I have to look up afterward. Spidey fights them, the monkeys escape, and we also see the baboon turn into like a huge fucking bird, and they just fly away on his back. So this baboon is amazing to me. Jumping to Spider-Man 255, we see the Black Fox, who's a thief, an old man thief that's connected to the Black Cat. He's trying to steal a vase, but it turns out it's a baboon. So he gets captured, and Yvonne's trying to build a new device called the Cosmicizer, which sounds like something Suzanne Summers would have promoted in the early 90s as
Yes,
an exercise
nice.
device. Again, he's trying to boost his cosmic rays, and he wants the Black Fox to like take over the super apes and like go commit some robberies and I can get the money, which is very like, dude, my children are exhausting, can you please babysit for a few hours? There's a big fight with Spider-Man. We also get to see the baboon turn into a snake here, which is really fun. They're back in Quasar number 6, where there's this kind of odd story with the Watcher and Quasar, and it's like tying into that time Red Ghost got lost in those like cosmic loops that plays in and out. And then they're back again in Power Pack 61 and 62, where they're fighting those like little alien-powered kids. So the baboon gets to shapeshift into Franklin Richards this time, which I think is the first time we've ever seen him use his powers to become like a humanoid. They end up fighting a little guy, a little alien dude called the Infant Terrible, who's an old Fantastic Four alien baby that has like cosmic powers. If he cries, like you will regret it. There's also the chameleons, like the horse aliens here. Igor gets to turn, or the baboon gets to turn into a gun at one point, and also he changes into the Power Kid's mom for a minute. So again, some more amped up spaces. And then finally, going into the mid-90s, we get Marvel Shadows and Light number one. The Red Ghost and the Super Apes are like capturing Rick Jones in the past because they're trying to duplicate his negabands, and they fight Captain Marvel, and the baboon gets to turn into a whole monster this time. Frankly, this is just the baboon episode. The others are just, it's his world. The other is living in it. I don't know. He's my favorite. So there's a bunch of stuff. Oh, the Red Ghost gets stuck in the negative zone here as well. So there's a lot of like leaving this guy floating in other dimensions. What are your thoughts on the journey of these characters thus far? They're kind of recurring bit villains, and the Super Apes themselves seem very much caught up in whatever Yvonne's like, we need more power plot is, and they're just happy to fight some superheroes. That's kind of, they're living their best life.
Yeah, they really have no reason at this point to still follow Yvonne. They kind of are like doing their own thing at this point. And I like that he's starting the baboon, of course, that you got to steal, is turning into people now, which is exciting. He's very much like becoming a Mystique villain in this world.
He's like really amped up sometimes too. You know,
Yeah.
crazy. The starship and the giant bird and the monster and like the gun that fires energy blasts out of it, right? Like if you're turning into a ship, it's like a whole engine inside. Like there's a lot of weird potential with this character.
You just have to wonder why they keep going back to him every single time they turn on him, which is a lot.
He gives them bananas, Molly.
I feel like that's not enough, though.
Right.
They
That's
can get
enough for
their own
minions, but not
bananas.
apes.
It's almost as though they're programmed with some sort of subservience, right? Like he's the alpha and they have to follow him, but once in a while they turn on him. I don't know. Maybe the cosmic rays connected them. Because why does the FF keep going back to Reed Richards? That's a question I have too.
Yeah.
Molly, will you take this next section of history? I'm gonna
Whatever.
make you jump into the 90s and early 2000s, and I don't know if you've ever read a single one of these books before.
So, fun fact, I actually worked on a couple of them, but I'll get
Okay,
there.
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with FF Unlimited number 5, which has this nifty cover with the FF, but not the one the FF you're expecting. It's Johnny, Sue, Ben, and Scott Lang Ant-Man, who was there for a while Reed was like sort of dead. They're fighting the Frightful Four, which this time is the Wizard. It's Sharon Ventura, although it took me a while to figure out that's who that was because she's
I
so
love her
different.
so much.
Yeah. And then Claw and the Red Ghost. And on the cover, he's got like this giant head sticking up like nose first through the ground. You could see up his nostrils. And the Wizard is assembling a new Frightful Four. And the Red Ghost like phases into the Wizard's headquarters and says that he wants to take over the group. And Claw forces him into tangibility with his sound powers. And the three of them agree to team up. Red Ghost, his face is looking like weirdly pink. And that actually comes up in the dialogue. He uses a tractor beam to zap Ben Grimm into the headquarters. And then Ben says, "Red Ghost, only with your face dyed to match your Cold War politics." I thought it was pretty great. Why he's red, there's like no explanation for it.
The
So
art on
Red.
this issue is rough, y'all.
Yeah. Red Ghost goes intangible, and then Ben mocks him about having been beaten by the Power Pack. And then it turns out that it wasn't Red Ghost at all. It was the baboon who turns into, and he turns into spaghetti to trap Ben. And that doesn't work. But then the gorilla attacks, and the real Red Ghost tells Ben that he no longer leads the super apes. Now he's not just a leader, he controls their every movement with his own mind. And all three apes attack Ben and they subdue him. But then the wizard like screws around while fighting Johnny, and Ben gets a second wind and tosses the apes off of him. And the orangutan hits the Red Ghost with a magnetic blast, and Ben knocks him out. And then the apes get away. And Red Ghost, Claw, and Sharon run away from the wizard. And then in some weird ending that I didn't really understand, everyone's memory of what happened gets wiped.
The Claw, Molly, when I worked on the Marvel handbooks, the Claw was the single most difficult entry I ever wrote for a
Huh.
handbook profile. It took me so long to figure out how his powers work. If you guys pick up the handbook with my name in it and read the Claw entry, I worked my ass off on that powers section. He's a crazy character to wrap your
Uses
brain
his like
around.
gauntlet to make like sound constructs, right?
Yeah, but sometimes he is sound, and sometimes he's human with like a sound horn, and other times he like, I don't know. If you read like Secret Wars, there's like an image where like the Beyonder has the sound on a table, like Claw on the table, and he's like sliced him up into pieces. And Claw's like, "Hey, everybody!" And he's just laying there like all hacked up. He's a crazy character to wrap your brain around. I'm not a fan. He's very Nazi colonizer too, which is terrible.
All right, so next there's FF 400. A Watcher, but not our Watcher, Uatu, is dead, and he's been killed by the Celestials. And another rogue Watcher, Eren, is trying to turn the solar system into a pocket universe. Like, it's this kind of weird Watcher business going on. So he has this universal converter, which is formerly an ultimate nullifier, and he takes all of the FF villains and transport them to where he is to distract the FF while he's working on his converter. And the Red Ghost and the Super Ape show up and they fight Ben. Oh, and because this is the 90s, there's actually a Beavis and Butthead reference that kind of threw me off here. But this is one of those anniversary issues where there's like a billion characters. So Ivan's actually only there for one page. And in the end, the day is saved and Uatu sends everybody home,
This
probably
would
with a
be a harder story to grasp, except we now have the What If Disney series where the Watcher becomes like a playable character. So just picture that guy going evil. That's all you need.
Okay, so
Okay.
then we go to FF Volume 3, Number 3, and that's Legacy Issue 432. This one has a delightful cover. It says Mr. Fantastic Goes Ape, and Reed's being attacked by all three super apes on the cover. And the issue title inside is even better. It's Happy New Year, Reed Richards. Now die. Amazing. So this takes place at Empire State University, where a grad student is researching monkeys, and she finds synthetic fibers in her research subject's tissues, and she calls her advisor. But there's this like big ape-like shadow behind her, which is the Red Ghost and all three super apes. But this time, the Red Ghost is standing hunched over, and he looks like an ape himself, like just with his posture. And the apes attack the grad student, and of course, Reed is her faculty advisor, and he rushes over to help her. And they've got her tied up. The apes have her tied up, and they're destroying her computers. And they reveal they've been posing as lab animals. A security guard shoots the baboon, who turns into like metal, I guess, and deflects the bullet, and then uses magnetic kinetics, yep, to grab him. And Reed's been hiding, and he notices the apes have become more intelligent. They reveal 1,000 gallons of nerve gas that they made themselves at night, like you do, to release and kill everybody in Times Square. Reed comes in and fights the apes, and he notes that each of the apes has adapted the powers of the other three. I guess the Red Ghost is included in that number, and that they got their new intelligence from him, because he's like way more ape-like and only speaking in like guttural single word phrases. He's also like really obsessed with a bunny in this episode.
This is also something we see in the FF every once in a while. They're like swap powers, or like one will lose their power so all the others will as well. And it's cosmic rays, so it's interesting to see that component explored here.
And then the gorilla goes intangible, so they definitely have Red Ghost powers. And they want revenge for the experiments on animals that are taking place at ESU. And Reed defeats the apes, and the rest of the FF, who have finally shown up, put them in quarantine. And Reed wonders if the FF will also begin to merge personalities and abilities because of the cosmic rays. Then we go to Spider-Man Human Torch number 3, which comes from a cool series that I worked on. So each issue takes place in a different era of Peter and Johnny's friendship. And this one takes place in the 90s when the Spider-Mobile was a thing. Peter and Johnny are in college, and Johnny's hitting on a Russian physics student named Nina, who is one of Reed's interns. And Peter, of course, happens to be the other intern. Reed has invented a gravity localizer, which basically lets people walk on walls like Spider-Man. And of course, you know, because she's Russian, Nina is working with the Red Ghost to try to steal the gravity localizer. But before she can do that, Spider-Man and Johnny steal it to add it to the Spider-Mobile and like drive it on walls. And at the same time, the Red Ghost is headed to the Baxter building to steal the device, flying with his apes on a piece of metal that one of the apes, the orangutan, I guess, has materialized. And Red Ghost phases through the wall and comes in shooting, only to find the device is already gone. And we see the Spider-Mobile driving up the sides of the building, so they know where it is. Peter almost hits a man in a trench coat with his car. And of course, that turns out to be the Red Ghost. The apes attack and steal the Spider-Mobile. And Red Ghost stands in front of a fire hydrant that he sets off to quench Johnny's fire. The gorilla is ripping apart the Spider-Mobile, and we learn the orangutan can parallel park better than Spider-Man.
That's hilarious to me.
right? Spidey, it comes up as like a major point here. Spidey distracts the apes with off-brand Hostess fruit pies, then jumps back into the car. Johnny uses the gravity localizer on the Red Ghost to hold him in place until Reed and the police get there. Reed fires both Nina and Peter, but lets Spidey drive the Spider-Mobile up the side of the Bugle building to piss off J. Jonah Jameson. So it's a really goofy story.
But really fun, too. This is Christos Gage, right?
No, I think it's Dan Slott.
It's Slott. Yeah. Of course.
Dan Slott with Ty Templeton.
Yeah, delightful.
So then we've got FFOs number 5, which I thought looked familiar when I opened the PDF you sent me. And I thought, did I work on this? And then I looked at the credits and I was like, oh, I did. And also my name spelled wrong. So that's cool.
Did they do laser with an S?
Lazar.
Molly Lazar. Yeah.
So in this series, like kind of the concept of the whole series, the Mad Thinker and the Puppet Master are having one of their many team ups in an attempt to get the DNA of the FF's rogue gallery and control all of them. So at this point, Reed's working on building a version of the vault in the negative zone to house all the villains, which I'll note is also something he does in the Civil War crossover issues of FF, which came out a year later, and which I just finished reading to my children. So I guess that's like just something he does, build a vault in the negative zone. The FF are going around and catching the villains to house there, including the wizard, whom they embarrassingly stumble upon while he's on the toilet reading Villain Weekly. The Red Ghost is the last villain they have to catch, but when they burst in on him, it's just a machine version of him, like a kind of like a Doombot, which explodes. And then the real Red Ghost bursts up through the floor with these like giant power gauntlet things on his hands. The orangutan holds up Reed with magneto powers while the baboon turns into an asbestos blanket, more asbestos, to stop Johnny. The gorilla hammers at Sue's force field, but Sue puts a force field around the Red Ghost and then compresses it and breaks his gauntlets. And then she gets the apes into a force field after the other FF members defeat them. Red Ghost materializes behind Sue, but Johnny throws some flame balls at him and Reed slaps a collar on him so he can't dematerialize. In issue 6, Red Ghost is in the negative zone prison when the alien wife of the architect, just roll with it, stages a jailbreak, and the Red Ghost decides he's not up to the, quote, physical challenge an escape would obviously require, and goes back and sits in his cell.
What are your thoughts on the character journey through this portion? It seems very similar. Yvonne, like, really trying to power himself up, the apes kind of big superhero antics from time to time, but not getting a lot of will.
I think that the volume 3, number 3 one is the most interesting, where you've got the Red Ghost, who's basically like regressed into an ape and the apes being super intelligent. And I kind of wish they went forward with that because that's really interesting.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
And then Sean, I have assigned you the, oh, you're welcome, I hope, because I know you're the X-Men fan. I assigned you all the X-Men relevant section. There's a bizarre little moment in history where the apes fought the X-Men in places you don't expect quite often, actually.
Yeah, thank you for this. So I apologize in advance. I've been holding this in like an uncomfortable fart. I am going to go on a big rant in 2 seconds here, but I will keep you involved, I promise. So Beast is relaying his life story to Ship. So this is the Apocalypse Ship that they took over.
This is an 8-part Beast story from Marvel Comics Presents 85 through 93 with, again, big crazy art.
So he's talking about his first day as an X-Men. He remembers working out in the Danger Room and he's being like kind of bitchy. And Professor X is basically like, Beast, come to my office. And we find out Professor X in all his assholiness erased Beast friend Jennifer's mind of knowing him to protect Beast. And this
ties into the original Beast origin stories from the 60s. Where Beast gets recruited to the X-Men and Xavier like wipes the whole town's mind of the memory of him being a mutant. I think we have a
That's
brief,
crazy. I think we have a he brief, didn't really do that to anyone else, right? But
he did it with other members of the original X-Men.
Okay.
Was that your rant, by the way?
Start of it.
Okay, please proceed.
Yeah, that was the start of it. Professor X left Beast with these memories. Like, that's such a jerk move to take away Jennifer's memories, but leave Beast with the memories of Jennifer, who now doesn't remember. That's my rant. You can forget about Jennifer. She doesn't show up anymore. But meanwhile, in Brussels, there's a body that's found scratched and mutilated. Brussels police are basically like, we need to fix this because the mutant symposium's coming up. So Beast is hanging out on Ship. And suddenly the male person, a male woman, comes to deliver a letter to Ship. You know, 1-800 or one repurposed Ship Lane. I don't know what address you'd put for this ship. But she gets attacked and Beast goes to save her. And then back in Brussels, a sinister man's like, well, damn, he got the letter. So Beast wasn't supposed to get this letter. So Beast boards a plane to Brussels. We get kind of a flashback of his past love, Jennifer Niles, who, of course, doesn't show up anymore in this story, except for she's a keynote speaker at the Mutant Symposium that Beast has just been invited to. So Hank fights with the Constrictor. The Constrictor has been hired to take him out. Beast subdues the Constrictor, and then the apes come. The apes start fighting. And then they abduct Jennifer, who is now in the story. I lied to you. And then Beast finds a new friend, the Frenchman. I don't think we ever get a name for the Frenchman, do we? He's just the Frenchman.
I think this is El Aguila, who is a French mutant with wings.
Oh, El Aguila. Okay, okay. So the Frenchman tells Beast about Commander Courage, or Lieutenant Commander Courage, and that he arrested the Red Ghost. So Beast thinks this is rather convenient. Oh, so we get attacked by the Red Ghost, and Commander Courage brings him into custody. Like, I think something's going on here. So they connect the dots between the Red Ghost, the Super Apes, and the disappearance of the Belgian scientist. They go to infiltrate the Belgian Ministry of Defense, and they find that the Red Ghost has been tied to a chair, and he's being interrogated. Beast asks Kragoff where the apes took Jennifer, and he doesn't know because the apes are no longer under his control, a theme that we see quite a bit here. Commander Courage intercepts Beast and tells him he wants to exploit his connection to the Avengers. Beast is thrown out of the ministry, and I love Beast for this. He's like, wait a minute, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So he goes to Constrictor, and he's like, hey, we're both being used. Why don't we team up? And Constrictor's basically like, sure, but I'm still going to kill you because I hate you. They go back to the ministry. They bust their way back in. They're attacked by reanimated wereborgs. So I had to look up what wereborgs are. So these are these are dead bodies reanimated with like cybernetics.
That's Commander Courage's whole thing. He has an army of wereborgs.
Yeah, very Star Trek. I love it. Beast realizes these are the victims of the Brussels serial killer reanimated, turned into weapons. Hank is able to find his way to Jennifer, but she shoots him in the chest, which has consequences. As the red ghost lays dying, an apparition of one of his apes comes to him and tells him they were being controlled by Commander Courage's and they promised not to leave him again. See, the super apes attack Constrictor, holding him at bay, and Beast is now imprisoned by Commander Courage. The commander tells Beast he plans on using Jennifer and her research to turn the techno-organic virus that's reanimating the wereborgs. I can't say that with a straight face. The wereborgs that's reanimating them. Beast thanks the commander for telling him the plan, and then he busts loose from the cage. He grabs Jennifer and they disappear. The angry Commander Courage demands his wereborgs to bring him Beast's head. Beast clandestinely hangs upside down over the crowd of villains, holding Jennifer's mouth shut. The Constrictor takes out the super ape Miklo, but he still has two left to deal with. He's just mad they don't get his witty banter. Yeah, because they're like, they don't understand anything he's saying. Once everyone leaves, Beast hops down and restrains Jennifer as he accesses the computer. He finds Commander Courage's plan to mind control five important leaders to rule through. So Red Guardian, who we know is Russian because he has red in his name, Doom in Latveria, Henry Gyrick, and Tony Stark in the US. So this is the US like flaunting, oh, we have two smart people, you only have one. And Madison Jeffries in Canada. So early appearance of Madison Jeffries. Jennifer was not aware of this part of the plan. Constrictor defeats the ape, but then he is surrounded by wereborgs. The Frenchman comes to his rescue. He reveals his scientist friend was the one who developed the wereborgs, but that Commander Courage killed him and took his research. Constrictor knocks down a wall and they find the red ghost close to death. They save him. They're confronted by Commander Courage. Just then, Beast finds the control to free the super apes. They show up and help fight off Commander Courage. With the crisis averted, Hank asks Jennifer how she got caught up in this, and she tells him ever since her mind suddenly changed back in college, she's been obsessed with mind control. Thanks a lot, Professor X. And randomly techno-organics. That just really tickled her fancy. This classic story of Red Ghost coming to her when at her lowest, when she had lost funding, so that's why she joined him. Hank and Jennifer kiss. Jennifer kind of remembers her lost memories of Hank and that she subconsciously invited him to the symposium. Let's see, the super apes kind of just start fighting everybody. They're just kind of protecting Kragoff at this point. Courage shoots Jennifer. She lays dying. It's this whole thing where Hank is like, should I bring her back with the wereborgs? But it's all right. She goes to the hospital and she gets better after only a week. From there, Red Ghost is kind of the hero. He puts a spike through Commander Courage's chest, which is intangible, and he turns tangible, taking out Courage. Yeah, that's about everything. But we get this tease that the technovirus is still alive in Jennifer, which definitely comes to fruition.
I'm seeing a Phalanx tie-in for sure. This is a fun story, and it really jumps to some unexpected places. I want to see a Commander Courage Professor Power team up. It sounds like a good time to me. Did you enjoy reading this old story, Sean?
I did. It was fun. And there was definitely like a Star Wars reference, which I'm a huge Star Wars fan. So this was fun to read. It was a little batshit.
And then where else do we see the super apes fight the X-Men? Anyone remember the Wild Kingdom crossover?
I think I willfully forgot it.
So this is a crossover that runs from X-Men 175 and 76 into Black Panther Volume 4, 8, and 9. It's the buildup to Storm and T'Challa's wedding. So the X-Men are getting involved here.
Yeah, and I'll say the one good thing real quick just to tease. There is some really great T'Challa and Aurora like back and forth in this. It's very much the will they, won't they play up, and it's brilliant. But Africa has turned to anarchy with the death of Mbutu, specifically Naganda. A new news reporter Joker is live on the scene in Africa, and he's suddenly attacked by a huge, like, mutated gator, and it's caught on camera. I had to throw this in because of our podcast, but back at the manor, Havoc tells Emma that something's up, and he's trying to get her to come, and she's like, wait, I'm you know, messing around with Cerebra. She's picking up on mutant activity in Africa. Havoc shows her the news, and it's basically visual of what she's been picking up on. Everything's going crazy. There's these mutated gators. Animals seem to be mutating now in Africa. So the team prep to leave. Storm insists she's going along. She tells Havoc she's coming, and Havoc's like, no, you're not. And she's like, oh, yes, I am. And she just gets on the plane. They travel to Warren Torn Naganda. Emma stays behind to monitor the mutating animals. The X-Men land in Naganda, and it is the neighbor of Wakanda. So Emma reaches out to T'Challa to be like, hey, this is your neighbor. Usually you can evolve. What's going on? But T'Challa doesn't answer. So they start entering a cave, and Storm is snagged by a mutant gator and taken underwater. But it's Storm. She calls on lightning, and she basically, like, takes out the whole lake. And then the X-Men, like, take out the dazed gators. Storm saves a man and woman from a radical group of being tormented. And the team follow clues to an old factory where there's caged mutated animals in the factory. Wolverine smells something and follows his nose to T'Challa. He's sitting in the middle of a room with knocked out men everywhere. So T'Challa has been looking into it. He basically, like, took out everybody in the factory, and he's researching on the computer now. He demands the X-Men to not enter the room. Being the X-Men, of course, they don't listen. A scientist appears and says Panther is creating the monsters. Panther seals off the room. The Rogue uses her sunfire powers because she had, like, absorbed sunfire fire at this point. He uses her fire powers to break into the room. It turns out the scientist, Dr. Eric Payne, has the ability to absorb power. So he takes Iceman and a few other powers and basically escapes. T'Challa tells them that this scientist goes all the way back to Genosha. So he was, like, experimenting on mutants in Genosha, very Nazi style. He got out of Genosha before it was destroyed, and he set up shop in Naganda after bribing the officials. Wakanda T'Challa tells them Wakanda couldn't intervene in Naganda because it would have been seen as moving against them, but T'Challa clandestinely took out Mbutu as the ruler in order to kind of help the tensions. The battle causes a power outage, which allows the mutant animals to get free. See Jurassic Park for more details. Knowing the X-Men would come for him, Payne experimented on himself and gave himself powers. T'Challa suggests Storm to try to quell the riots, so only the X-Men that Payne already absorbed should go after him, so he doesn't get any new powers. The X-Men leave, and Storm and T'Challa have a little moment, and the X-Men are stopped by an automated attack systems. Wolverine is stabbed from behind with Payne's claws that were Wolverine's power. We also get this tease where T'Challa's like, ooh, I can smell that Wolverine really wants you. So there's a very, like, battle for Storm going on in the background. Outside, rioters are about to attack Innocent. Storm electrocutes them. T'Challa's hacking away at the Nagandan systems, and he is attacked by the talking monkeys, by the apes. One of them hypnotizes him. Payne has the X-Men captured, and he's ready to experiment on them. T'Challa is saved by the Dora Milaje right before he's completely hypnotized. Of course, though, as they're, like, pampering him, Storm walks in, and she's like, ugh, nice harem, bitch, and she walks away.
T'Challa's like, I'm jealous of your hot teammates, and she's like, yeah, well, I'm jealous of the whole warrior force of brides in training that you've got, buddies.
Yes. Payne is busy chastising his hypno baboon for letting T'Challa go. So did the baboon have hypno powers before this point?
I don't think so, but it might be a different baboon too. We also had that one telepathic that escaped the one time.
Yep. The baboon blames Payne for not training him better. Red Ghost is seen meeting with Payne, so they are working together. Payne takes Ghost to the unconscious X-Men. Payne plans on removing part of their brain to turn them into mindless weapons. But is Polaris actually sleeping? Later out, you find out she is. I just put that because I thought she was waking up. So Emma orders Storm to check on the X-Men. She ditches Panther. Payne frees the X-Men. He shows them that Lorna is being slowly fed snake poison through IVs, and he tells them they have to kill Red Ghost in order to save them. Storm joins back up with the team. Meanwhile, Red Ghost doesn't trust Payne. He craves money too much. He orders the apes to start his own plan. They go to free the baboon, and the baboon tells his own plan to spread an anti-human virus across Naganda. So there's, like, plan within plan within plan. Everybody has their own plan. Yep. So the X-Men start on their mission to save Polaris. They go to kill the Red Ghost, but they actually team up with him. So we find Panther has been left fighting Dragon Man, who suddenly Dragon Man is here. The apes start to prep the virus. Red Ghost goes looking for them. He becomes tangible. Rogue knocks him down. Havoc tells Red Ghost they are being blackmailed to kill him, and Havoc offers a team up to save Red Ghost and Polaris. I promise I'm almost done. The X-Men bring Red Ghost to Pain. Then they spring their trap. Just when Pain gets the upper hand, enter T'Challa and Dragon Man. They dispatch Pain momentarily. T'Challa frees Polaris. Wolverine and Rogue engage Pain in combat. Pain takes down the X-Men until Red Ghost rips out Pain's heart. So Red Ghost is the hero again. He demands to know where his apes are. While they're upstairs preparing to infect the human crowds below, the apes throw the canister, but Storm uses her power to catch it. The crowds hail the return of the goddess. Storm decides to stay in Wakanda and focus on herself, and she kisses T'Challa and flies off. The end.
There is a distinctive character, a new monkey named Cuttleface, introduced in this arc, who is
Oh,
capable of human
yes.
speech. And then you kind of almost wonder if this baboon. It is a brand new character, and it does show up again in Black Panther Volume 4, number 8 and 9, along with another mutant gorilla. So there's like an expansion of the apes mythos just a little bit. It's really fun to see this very thoughtful story in a lot of ways. I thought it was a really delightful one. Sean, what was it like for you to read this old, deep kind of Fantastic Four continuity mixing with the X-Men?
It's been a lot of fun. Sometimes it's fun going back and seeing where the Marvel comics started, because I feel like up until the 90s, they were a little crazy. Like, things just happen because characters are just thrown in because, like, it's a fun ride.
So I'm going to cover the rest of their history quickly. We jump to New Warriors Volume 3, Number 2, where we get to see the super apes move to like a private zoo that this old rich man had, and they liberate all the animals were there, and there's a superhero fight. But basically, they just leave the apes to live there at the end. They're like, hey, go have a good time. The Avengers stop them during a Marvel Apes special in Number 1. And when we jump to the Marvel Apes Speedball special, we see Yvonne, and this is the whole ape universe again. We see Yvonne back in charge of the apes, but he learns that there's this whole universe of other superpowered monkeys. Two of them are operating on our planet. There's a monkey Speedball and a monkey Apex jumping around. So there's a big fight, and he's like, I must rule the world of the Marvel Apes. And he's like trying to get through this portal. But when he gets there in Marvel Apes, The Amazing Spider Monkey Number 1, he discovers that there's an outbreak of zombie monkeys. He's like, no.
Because
too much crossover.
It really is funny, though. I don't know. I think it's really delightful. We end up seeing the Red Ghost join that group of like super thinkers called the Intelligentsia with an NTSIA that fight the Hulk through the early 2000s. It's a team with like Mad Thinker, Leader, Egghead, MODOK, Awesome Android. Mr. Sinister shows up here a little bit, and Red Ghost has some parts and some ongoing stories. We don't see the X-Men as part of it until X-Men, or excuse me, until Hulk Volume 2, Number 20, where he and his apes fight the X-Men and the Red Hulk, and there's nothing super huge except the baboon gets to fire some lasers at like Cyclops and Iceman. The orangutan overpowers Storm briefly with a magnetic tornado, and the gorilla just gets to fucking pound Beast into the ground. But then the Red Hulk attacks and literally rips the gorilla's head in half. You know that old Kong, like King Kong movie from the 40s? Yeah, the old claymation King Kong where we see like the ape dinosaur fight and he like pulls the T-Rex's head in half, and it's claymation, it's the old monster movie. It's very
You're
that.
talking about like a Harryhausen.
But the gorilla is dead. So we immediately see the Red Ghost make a new superpowered gorilla. And this one is a baby in a diaper, and he has super strength. And his name is Grigori. And we get to see the apes fight the She-Hulks. And the baboon turns into a fucking tiger in that issue. We also get to see in Amazing Spider-Man 676, the magnetic orangutan powers up a whole device that like is like interacting with Earth's magnetic fields, which is very, very power up instead. So Grigori is the new baby gorilla in the diaper who's super strong, which, rest in peace, Miklo, but I'm here for Grigori. I think he's kind of great. Yvonne also gets like major sideburn game here. Like it's like the big like old timey mustache that grows into sideburns through this, like the Old West photos. I think it's great. They briefly show up in Winter Soldier, the series, and they're back in like FF with like the Watcher stuff. They're in like Steve Steve Rogers, where like the Hydra evil Steve is there, and he seemingly evil Steve or Steve-el Rogers like seems to kill the gorilla again with his shield. They're in the Ziggy Pig Silly Seal book where they join up with a group called the Masters of Animal Evil with a bunch of like superpowered animal characters: Armadillo, Dr. Octopus, the evil Nazi bees that make up Swarm, and a character that's only shown up here once called the Doomfish, which is a goldfish and a doom mask, and they fight the Pet Avengers. They're in the recent Thunderbolt series where Jim Zub wrote them. Like the baboon and the orangutan are like leading an uprising of apes in Central Park fighting the Thunderbolts. And then the aforementioned Avengers Assemble Volume 3, Number 2 is where we see the Avengers fighting Yvonne in a small town where he's built this gun that coagulates people's blood. And he ends up getting terrorized by the radioactive ghosts of his early monkey experiments, who are like ghosts that are unrested. Like the Avengers help like release these spirits into their next life. Okay, that was a lot of super ape summary in a row. Let's take some time to talk about these characters. What is it about them as we summarize them that kind of makes them magical or formidable? What are the things that come to mind when you think about what these characters are capable of or what they represent?
And I think that's really like when you think of like comic book villain, like that's the kind of thing you think of, like crazy Russian guy with super apes who have crazy powers. Like that's your comic book super villain. I think they could be a lot more formidable than they are. Like it seems like, you know, in this giant summary that we had, they just get smacked down a lot or they turn on each other and like that's it. But, you know, we've said the baboon has these like crazy powers. And, you know, we've seen the orangutan do like really cool and weirdly powerful things with its magnetism. So I think they could be a lot more formidable than they are, but they're just kind of goofy.
Yeah, there's an odd kind of energy. It's almost like Mole Man powered up three Moloids, and we're like, "You're my team now. You must worship me," right? There's an interesting kind of brain chemistry and power chemistry connection between those original characters hit by the cosmic rays, and then you know, like the experiments that have replicated the others. There's like an odd potential for like an ape society with the original apes ruling, and Yvonne kind of becoming a character that's like preserving them and like changing his ways, right? Like he's a fun camp villain, but I think there's some potential where we change the slavery mentality of the story into a conservation one. And I think that's one way to make these characters really interesting, is to make them more noble.
So when I think of the Super Apes, this is going to sound weird, but go with me. It makes me think of Hocus Pocus. Winifred Sanderson is like such a powerful witch, and the only thing that is her like Achilles heel is her sisters and her love for her sisters, but they're bumbling idiots. I see the Super Apes as kind of that in reverse. The apes are super powerful, but their love for Kragoff is their, you know, sisters. Is that's the only thing that I think that holds them back, is they have this weird like loyalty to him. I think if they were to go out on their own and actually like we saw in Wild Kingdom, they were about to like do their own plan and like it was gonna work. They just barely got stopped by Storm. I'd like to see the apes, like you said, I want to see them kind of break free, kind of stop seeing this whole slavery thing and more of a like, let's subjugate Kragoff. Like, I feel like we haven't really seen that.
It's interesting for me if we can tell a story where we amp up the apes' minds a little bit, and it becomes kind of an anthropomorphic story of like a character, you know, much like when a robot develops sentience, right? Where we get to kind of see they're exploring what it means to be human or superpowered creatures in this kind of weird world where, you know, all the habitats are getting eaten up. But I think there's some interesting parallels that could be made there. I think Red Ghost is hilariously campy. I don't think we have a lot on the interior world of this character. Like Mole Man and Dr. Octopus are characters that I sympathize with, but I really have no sympathy for the Red Ghost until we get some sort of like a relationship that matters, right? You just dump him in a dimension or make him trapped in as an intangible person, or you know, erase his mind. Like there's all these weird things. Here's the story I want to write if I did a Super Apes exploration. And I think it could be like a one issue thing, although it would be really fun to play it out over a period of time. I think they almost have like a Great Lakes Avengers energy, if you guys are familiar with those characters, where I don't know, like the Thing and the Human Torch like have a bet on who can make the super apes like the best superheroes. And it's like this kind of crazy antic story of the two of them winding up fighting each other when the super apes secretly had the plot to win all along, right? Like I think there's a lot of fun, but we have to make the apes capable of talking. We've got to give them the ability to like interact as characters more frequently.
Yeah, so they do have that ability briefly in Fantastic Four.
times.
Yeah.
These are interesting things too, and because this is Colossus Month on the show, one of the reasons that makes this story interesting, most Russian characters in comics are, as Molly said earlier, just kind of caricature, silly supervillains. If they are Russian, they have the weird accent. Now, we're living in a time where if you saw the recent Thunderbolts movie, there's like three Russian characters running around all at the same time when you look at Black Widow, and Red Guardian, right? And they are all very, very storied characters. But we've never really seen that with a lot of characters. And Colossus was certainly the first, the super strong mutant who escaped all the crazy, right? And this is another example of the corrupt Russian government, the obsession with kind of cosmonauts and radiation and developing weapons. There's a lot of interesting components that capture some of the themes we're exploring with Piotr this month on the show. Sean, do you have any thoughts?
I like that you put Kragoff in Colossus Month, and you're right, Kragoff, we don't know anything about his backstory, so yeah, he's a typical Russian. I like that they've kind of fleshed out Colossus. He has a family, he has a sister. Yeah, I'd like to see that treatment for Kragoff. I want to know more.
Yeah, and Kragoff versus Colossus would also be fun. Mostly, though, the super apes are super camp. They're really funny to consider as villains. They give very much like I feel like I'm watching the old like 1970s Spider-Man cartoon, and you know, like there's kooky sound effects and like kind of ridiculous animation. They're hard characters to take seriously, which is why we get that most recent Steve Orlando story with the radioactive ghosts of the monkeys, and it kind of hits in a resonant way. Like these are creatures that are suffering that need to be laid to rest.
It definitely felt a lot darker, very much today's tone than these comics that we covered. Because, yeah, you're right, the apes were in a lot of pain. It was almost kind of like a resident type story, kind of a scary story. I would love to see that get fleshed out more and see kind of the darker side of he's mind controlling apes and like messing with their physiology. So I want to see that.
And my most important question thus far, Sean, fuck, marry, kill Dr. Pain, Commander Courage, and the Red Ghost.
Oh, I'm gonna kill the Red Ghost. I'm going to I'm gonna fuck Commander Courage, because I don't know, you don't want to keep him around too long. And I'll marry Pain. Yeah, he's got all these powers, so he could be fun.
This is a delightful kind of journey, and it's an odd one to kind of wrap your brain around. These characters are not treated very seriously, but they're super powerful. And when you get them involved in like American supervillainism, that's one thing, but you involve them in kind of ethics, like world ethics, or even Russian politics. I think that's where the characters start to become really fascinating and in a way that kind of sings. But give them some things that make them special, right? Give them some characteristics. You know that the gorilla is super into like making cosplay for people. You learn the orangutan loves to read Dostoevsky in the bathroom, and you learn that the baboon is an amazing chef and will use his like shape-shifting powers to turn his hands into like egg beaters and like oven timers. To like, you give them a little bit of character, and I think that makes them beloved in a way that people never forget them again. That's my kind of resonant thoughts on these guys. Do we have any final thoughts or questions? Anything that left you confused?
This is actually a little bit off topic, but Sean, just to go back to what you were saying about what a dick Charles Xavier is earlier, I pose a question of the day to my reading students each time we have class. And this week, one of the questions happened to be, would you rather have telepathy or telekinesis? And almost everybody picked telekinesis, but one of my students was like, oh, hey, I know Professor Xavier has both of those. Ms. Laser, do you like him? I was like, fine. But the hatred of Charles Xavier was like seeping through this student. And I thought that was kind of amusing.
I just thinking about this, I think it'd be fun. A new place to take Red Ghost would be in both the stories that I covered. He turns out to be the hero. He comes full circle and defeats the bigger villain. I think it'd be funny if he comes to a realization that maybe I would make a better hero, but then his apes, who have become smarter, are like, what the hell? This dude just totally like betrayed us. So we get this kind of struggle of him trying to convince the apes to like be heroes with him.
Yes, I love that actually. But he only seems to want to be a hero out of self-preservation, right? Like, that's the
True.
only time I want to do something good, which is why I think a character upgrade here would be interesting for this guy. There's no key relationships. Again, my favorite version of him is on the Intelligentsia. Like, I don't like him cosmic. I don't like him in the Watcher's house. I don't like him floating around other dimensions. Petty villainy and/or some deeper motivations are needed for that specific character. character. Also, what happened to that ability for him to turn into the creepy red mist floating around in the air? Because, ew.
Yeah.
Like something got squirted into anti-gravity. It's gross. Well, what a delight to hang with you both. Just a silly kind of fun episode. It's fun to work in some of these FF villains that I'm so fond of and to find reasons to bring them in. So stay tuned on the show. We're going to put this out on July 17th. I'm getting a little ahead on the show so I can travel this summer. So we're going to put this out on July 17th on the Patreon. On the very next episode, please watch for an episode about or an exploration of the characters, the presence and Starlight. Over on the main show, all Colossus content. So the next main episode will be a review of the series X-Men Liberators with series writer Joe Harris and former Marvel editor Jason Liebig. We'll close out the month, of course, with the trial of Pyotr Rasputin. So stay tuned for that. Where can people find you both online? Anything you want to plug and any final thoughts? Let's go Sean and then Molly.
Sure. So my name's Sean. You can find me on Solving for X and X-Men Task Podcast or on Words of the Witches. You can find both of those on Instagram or TikTok. You can find me at Shawnee Havoc on Solving for X. Right now we are in season 4 X-Men Evolution, and we'll be giving a recap of Uncanny Experience last weekend.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Molly Laser on Blue Sky. My posts are mainly pictures of my cat and also posting about comics and Doctor Who at the moment. My books are available on Amazon and at bookshop.org.
Molly, when we release this, school will be over and you just get to sleep all summer, right? That's what
I do not do, right? Get to sleep all summer. No, I have various projects and I will be carting my children around everywhere.
Yeah. No, I'm teasing. My mom was a first grade teacher and I always remember people being like, you're so lucky to have your summers off. She's like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Except my mom would never say, oh my God, that would be like swearing for her. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for learning about the Super Apes with us. That was silly and fun. And thanks to Molly and Sean for hanging out. We'll see you all back here next time on the Grey Milk and Lane Patreon. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. The swastika is an ancient symbol with roots stretching back more than 3,000 years. It appears in Hindu, Buddhist, Jain, Greek, Slavic, and indigenous cultures as a sign associated variously with good fortune, well-being, the sun, or cyclical renewal. Its name in Sanskrit, svastika, means conducive to well-being. In the late 19th century and early 20th century, several European nationalist thinkers wrongly interpreted the symbol as an emblem of the supposed Aryan race. These pseudoscientific racial theories were circulating widely by the time the German Völkisch movement adopted the swastika as a marker of the imagined racial purity. Adolf Hitler encountered the symbol in these nationalistic circles and chose it as the emblem of the National Socialist German Workers' Party, NSDAP, in the early 1920s. He personally designed the final flag, a black swastika tilted at 45 degrees with a white circle on a red background. Hitler claimed the red symbolized the social component of Nazism, the white, the nationalist component, and the swastika, the struggle of the Aryan race. Once the Nazis rose to power in 1933, the flag's use became mandatory in public life, replacing traditional German symbols and becoming central to Nazi propaganda. Through its association with the regime's crimes and genocide, the swastika has since become an enduring emblem of fascism, anti-Semitism, and racial violence. The eagle, however, has a long tradition in Germanic and Roman iconography, symbolizing authority, imperial strength, and martial power. The Holy Roman Empire used the Reichsadler, or imperial eagle, for centuries, and various German states continued to employ forms of it into the 19th and 20th centuries. The Nazis adopted this image deliberately to place themselves in a supposed continuum of Germanic destiny and imperial heritage. Nazi leadership stylized the eagle into what became known as the Partieadler, or party eagle, and Reichsadler, or state eagle, each holding a wreath containing a swastika. The eagle facing right was typically used for state purposes, while the left facing variant denoted the Nazi party specifically. These symbols appeared on uniforms, official seals, banners, currency, medals, and architecture. Their intent was dual, to evoke historical continuity with earlier empires and to announce the authoritarian militaristic nature of the regime. The eagle's aggressive, modernized form and its integration with the swastika created a unified visual language that communicated dominion, national unity, and ideological political purity, key pillars of the Nazi propaganda. I think sometimes
Interesting.
it's helpful to learn the history of the symbols that we see. I'm going to jump into Captain America, number 50. This is a book from the late 90s. This is a story in the middle of the book called Relics by Brian David Marshall and Igor Cordy. Some of our X-Men fans may recognize Igor Cordy's name. Captain America's having a bored night at home when he gets a message on his old hotline from some kids saying they found a nuclear bomb. Like, hey, Cap, 1-800. Fury says this is not legit, but Cap rides his motorcycle in anyway and finds a bunch of senior citizens dressed in black coats with red skull masks. Overwhelmed, Cap gets captured and strapped to a nuclear bomb, and the leader of the faux skulls laughs in Cap's face. Like clockwork, from your predictable reaction to the hotline to your unwillingness to strike your elders, I will savor this all the more if you exhibit your vaunted fighting spirit. You're an impressive specimen. It's a shame you chose to enslave yourself to this mongrel nation, this pitiful democratic society that rewards the weak. Cap replies, what would anyone wearing that mask know about a democratic society? I can tell you more than you care to know, says the man. I'm only here at the behest of your government. Myself and countless others you see with me were smuggled into this country, our war crimes expunged in exchange for meaningless information about the Fuhrer's plans for a nuclear device. At first, I was content to chew my cud and grow fat in my split-level home here in Chansey. I even paid my taxes. Then we were forced from our homes by the very same government, a government so vast and corrupt that one tentacle was unaware of what the other was doing. We were but a splinter of the spear, but we knew we could stab at America's heart. So they learned of this abandoned nuclear bomb, though it took them years to find the core of it. So these are old Nazi war spies that are coming out of the woodwork. By the time we found it, we had aged from a vital army to a suicide cult. I have lived on hatred for many years, waiting for this moment. 15 seconds is just enough time to think about everyone you have ever loved. When all this is over, there will be a glassy crater where New Jersey used to be, and lying in the center will be your indestructible shield, and everyone will know that America's champion failed them. But of course, Cap breaks free. Let me tell you about America, Nazi. America is a place where you're free to think and feel however you choose, but you can't hurt people. You squandered your chance at the American dream. You gave up your chance at tomorrow, and that's the difference between us. Even when things seem hopeless, America always finds hope. Later, when Cap was believed dead, the real Red Skull shows up for just a moment to provide some commentary. I only regret that my own two hands weren't the instruments of his death. May he rot in hell, and may this be the knife stabbed into the heart of your damned America at long last. Let me welcome my buddy Alan White to the show for this crazy conversation. Hi,
Wow.
Alan. Are you a Red Skull fan, my friend?
I've never been a Red Skull fan. Just only, because of his ideology and because he's a Nazi. It snuck up on me because not just Cap determinism to overcome them, even though he was all the odds are against him, but then the follow-up, because he that is a nuclear bomb. He throws it out of the window, or he depowers the nuclear part, and the explosion goes off, just like a regular explosion, and it's a big explosion, and everybody thinks he's dead, like the country thinks he's dead. And then you have all these, like you just read, the Red Skull weighs in on his opinion about Cap's death, but then you have all these other think pieces from other heroes and citizens that think he's dead, and they give their thoughts and their well wishes, and it snuck in on me, and I got teary-eyed. I'm like, yeah, because that's what it would feel like to have a national symbol that you laid a lot of hope in, and then lose that national symbol, lose that hope, and cling and just kind of try to move forward after you've lost hope.
Our country has certainly lost great leaders in our past, and there have been times of kind of national grieving as a result when one of those leaders is lost. Martin Luther King is an amazing example, but even as recently as, some of the candidates in office that seem to represent American values, there's just a there's a grief that shows up for people when this happens, and I like when they can capture that in a Cap story. Now, Cap gives a lot of words in his little, final speech, but he basically says America is a place you're free to think and feel however you choose, but you can't hurt people. That's where we draw the line. And here we have a story called Relics. Tell me your thoughts on the old Nazis putting on their it's a senior citizen brigade of baby boomers from the
Yeah, because
war.
after the original Nazis aged out, they started to attract all these other disillusioned baby boomers into their town.
right? And all those numbers that overcame Cap weren't just the original Nazis, but they were also disillusioned elderly American, right? So what is that telling us? It's telling us that as we go forward in time, we might be leaving behind people that without keeping our eyes on all the citizens of every generation, we might be fomenting a kind of mindset of people that feel left out, feel unheard anymore, feel like they've lost their country. Right. And those people are still voters. And so we wind up like what we have now, I think, is just people that they don't, the people that don't care so much about the new values and the new generations with all of our diversity of every kind, including sexuality, they feel threatened and left out. And they got to the polls and they said, we're not going to stand for it. And so it's hard to even talk to them if we don't listen to them.
Yes, and I think the title Relics says a lot. Like these are old, antiquated thinking. The world has moved on, but here we have these symbols, right? We see the swastika and the eagle here, which I thought was a good time to talk about the adoption of those symbols. You know, the American flag in many parts around the world does not represent freedom and safety and opportunity. It represents murder and oppression and like overthrowing of governments and you know, wanton profiting off of people. So it's interesting to kind of watch that idea around symbology. And the real symbol in this issue is not the swastika or the eagle, but the symbol of the red mask. The skull face that they all put on to represent who they are is akin to the white hoods that may have been used at a certain point in our country's history. Sometimes stories like this will show like, oh, this was an American person who is latching on to Nazi ideals, but these are literal old Nazis climbing out of the woodwork, right? Like it's Captain America versus men of his generation, but he's in perfect form in his Aryan body.
Hey,
Well, they
but
are
before
all elderly.
no, I'm before before I sound like I am a sympathizer for
Oh no, you don't sound that way at all. No,
good.
rationality is not sympathization.
Right. Because there are, as we're, if we try to listen, and this is a thing that I'm being more and more aware of, because I am a African American. No, I'm not African American. I'm Black American. I'm not from Africa. But, and somewhere a long way down the line, my people are from Africa, but I don't know from where because things got severed. But I don't have the personal experience of having like an uncle or a grandfather or anybody like that that's gonna, I'm gonna sit at the Thanksgiving dinner table and I'm gonna hear stuff that I that just hits me to my core and just kills me because of what they believe and I'm related to them. I don't have people like that in my personal family, right? So I think we'd have to listen, but I know that there's a limit of what to listen to and where you draw your line, right? But if they just know that we are trying to talk to them by listening to them at the same time, we might get a dialogue going. These red helmeted, these red-headed Nazi red skull wannabes, they're not, they, I don't know whoever they had conversations with, but they're all having conversations with one another, and they're willing to die now to just stab an eye in the America that they feel betrayed them, feel like threw them out of the neighborhoods they promised they could have.
Yeah, willing to die for a cause, which is a crazy thing to consider. But for all these years, these men had their story is literally like we came here, we profited off of your country. We've grown fat and comfortable and we have communities, but now it's our time to prove ourselves to the motherland once again. Like the idea of like these old ideas being poisoned themselves, and when you can't let go of them, you don't change, I think is a through line here too. I think it's a pretty smart story for a short like Cap feature. I think there's a lot packed into this. It's not 100% successful, but I do think it's a pretty solid read. How you doing in 2025, my friend? We're talking about ancient symbols and how we're trying to survive these days, you know?
Well, as you know, and as you are, I'm a therapist, like you're a therapist, and so I'm preserving my peace on purpose so I could be of any good to anyone else who's coming to me for help in the therapeutic relationship with my clients. So I'm fighting hard to preserve my peace, and that means I am limiting my intake of the media. When I need to know something about what's going on in current events, I seek out a source where I can just read it at my own pace. And it doesn't come with a lot of voice. It doesn't come with a lot of images and a lot of like media presentation that can get you really hyped up or really draw you in, appeal to your emotions, whether they be negative or angry or positive or whatever. I just give me this, just give me the information. Let me read it in a neutral space so I'll know what's going on without it also snatching me by the gut and having me sit here seething for hours when
Yeah.
I will need to, dismiss that and now be a therapist. I have to preserve my peace.
Wellness is an active choice, and I think that's a different story for all of us, right? There's
Right.
interesting. We could have a whole long conversation about the shifting dynamic of therapy in 2025, because for me, normally I don't. So I do crisis work, for example. When someone comes in to sit for crisis work, if they were to say something like, "I don't like gay people," that's normally a thing I'm not going to talk about. That's not what I'm there for. I'm going to let them process through their stuff. But when people are coming in, even in the face of tragedy, and starting to share, like, "I think that transgender people are possessed by the devil, and I am a Trump supporter. I believe in him. I think he's the returned Messiah." Like, when I'm hearing that shit, I don't think I can draw the lines that clearly anymore, right? Like, where's the boundary for safety? I think there's a shifting dynamic in our field in the kind of crazy rhetoric. I'm in Utah, you're in New York, we're in different places, but they each carry their own weight of history. It's an odd time to be a therapist, is what I'm saying.
Well, there's a therapist on that came across my social feeds, and she is a she, what does she call herself? She's clear about she's not going to be the kind of therapist that just couches intolerance and hate. When I get her information, I'll urge you to, or I'll put like a comment underneath the IG if you put it on your IG,
Yeah, I'd
for
be happy to.
to link to her, because she's right in your face about it, but she is completely therapeutic about it. And everything that she says about it is well reasoned. And even though she has emotion in her voice when she's saying it, like determination, like I am not going to sit and allow that kind of dialogue in a therapeutic space. I'm not going to protect someone who is violating other people's civil rights, like that
My
kind of
mind
thing.
is clear.
I'm completely on that page. I'm fortunate, but to your point, I am in New York City, and so my clients are not as polarized as that.
Yeah, Utah's crazy. That's a crazy. Well, recording these always are very educational for me, and I love to form connections with friends. I have really enjoyed befriending you through the show. It's always a great joy to have you on, and I can't wait to hang out again. We've got some big plans
Man,
for February, I think.
thanks so much for bringing me on. Like I love the whole community you built. I love your show. I love your personality. I just couldn't stay away.
Thank you very much, my friend. I've gone through a lot of changes with this show. It's been interesting to reflect my journey. Like, this year, 2025 is shitty. This is one of my
No
least
joke.
favorite years in my life, but the show has continued to create a place of solace, even as I've gotten kind of more serious in my presentation. But it's still fun to just giggle, right? Like, we're having a good time always. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Please take care of yourselves. Thank you, Alan, for joining me today. We will see you all back here next week on Gray Malkin Lane.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.